Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Over 100 years, Gillette has stood with men through early mornings, late evenings, and everything in between. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Game on 2FM.
And you're welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, John Keegan of Leinster Club Football Champions Mullan Nyokta is going to join us to talk through yesterday's brilliant win against Kilmacud Crokes. Andy McEntee on the return of the inter-county season and the new trial rules in the GA at the moment and what they were like at the weekend. Didn't have a huge impact from what I can gather. Alan Cawley and Clinton Morrison discuss the weekend Premier League as Liverpool go top of the table. James Downey on a clean sweep for the Irish provinces in the Champions Cup and of course the Challenge Cup as well with Connacht in Europe this weekend. And Don McLean reviews the Tingle Creek and the John Durkin as Altior and Min shine. 51552 is your text number if you want to get in touch at GameOn2FM if you want to contact us via social media as they call it these days. And Alan Cawley is with me in studio. How are you doing?
I'm good, Hugh. Yourself?
I'm good. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, good weekend.
Yeah.
Full of sport, the usual.
Yeah. Full of sport.
Yeah, it was. I watched loads now. Well, normally I watch loads anyway, but I watched loads and loads.
What is it about 2018 in sport, do you think, Alan?
Is it
when
just...
you think about it, there's been one good story, one brilliant story after another, after another, after another.
But is that just 2018, or is that not just sport in general?
See, I'm trying to... my memory's awful. I mean, I can barely remember what happened last week, which is not ideal if you're trying to present sports shows or commentate and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, maybe it is a bit of present-day bias or...
I think it is. To me... every year is full of great sports stories, and maybe it's just because I'm obsessed with kind of sport,
yeah,
and that's all I kind of do. But is it not just great sport all the time? And the one thing that always strikes me is when all these great stories are happening, and it's no disrespect to people who are not into sport, but I often think, what do to do if you're not watching?
What's
sport?
Your life all about if you're not into sport? Like, imagine that,
you know, like,
imagine,
is that a fair question to ask?
I think it is, there was a chat show on recently. What was it? I think it was Brendan O'Connor's Cutting Edge, and one of the panelists, you know, he has this thing on the slab, right? So they put out things that they're just not happy about, and each of the three guests goes through, and one of the guests said, oh, sport. So basically talking about sport. And
I think I heard that.
Yeah. And she basically, her point was, I'm trying to remember who it was.
Oh, I know who it was as well. I watched it, and I was actually, for the first time ever, I was going to text into a show.
I'm sick and tired of people talking about sport. Yeah. And I just thought, oh God.
For the first time I was ever going
to
text
into a show. Have you nothing in your life to be given out about except for sport?
And when you think of, like, look what it did for, obviously we're going to speak about Mullan Nyokta, but when you think of those stories too, but every story sport brings so much joy. You can just filter through pages there on the internet today from whatever part of the world, and there's stuff that has brought kind of happiness to so many people through all different sports. It doesn't have to be just one sport.
It's great. Your man Ronnie O'Sullivan, another win under his belt
last night.
He says he's going to play for 10 more years.
It was brilliant, Hugh. It was absolutely brilliant. And to be fair to Mark Allen, the standard was, he played as well as he probably could play. Allen, he's just, O'Sullivan is just on a different level. It's crazy how good he is. And this debate is beginning to enrage now, and Steve Davis, for the first time I ever heard him, was really, really strong on it last night in terms of this whole sports personality thing, because he always gets overlooked. Taylor was overlooked for years as well with the darts. But how they can overlook Ronnie O'Sullivan for the likes of that award when you think how good he is, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, these things as well, but they always generate debate, and you know, you're never going to get people to agree on stuff, because as many people would say, oh, but snooker, what is snooker? You know?
That's what Davis
was saying.
Lewis
Hamilton won it that year. I mean, I'd sit down and watch it. Formula One race, you know, I like driving the car around and all that. Fast cars, great, but I wouldn't be huge into Formula One as a sport. But I mean, when he won, and I remember the outrage that Rory McIlroy didn't win it. But again, like, there's plenty of people that say, "Well, sure, Rory McIlroy." I mean, golf. You couldn't care less about golf.
And these are what I don't pay too much attention. It's like the thing with last week, that Ballon d'Or, and people getting highly excited about it. I saw
people losing their mind because Lionel Messi finished fifth. And who cares? Yeah. I mean, honestly.
That's what I'm saying. So these award things, they don't bother me in the slightest, but just, I suppose, the narrative with the BBC after the snooker, Davis and John Parrott in the studio for the first time. But when you think of what he's achieved, Hugh, and you have Hendry, who was the best, Davis before that was the best.
Sullivan's better than Hendry, sure.
Yeah, but that's...
But in terms of a record.
No, but Davis was the best. Then you have Hendry comes on, dominates him and overtakes him. Now you have a Sullivan who's the greatest ever. And when you have the likes of those two and the esteem that they're held in, basically coming out having no problem saying, yeah, he's the greatest.
Tony Drago. He'd have to be up there. Big Tony.
He's right. Just unreal. He really is.
Okay, just a couple of texts in. Hugh, you are clearly suffering from a serious bout of recency bias here. Yeah, maybe I am. I just think 2018, everything that's happened, you know, I mean, you go back to the Irish women's hockey team at the World Cup, obviously the Six Nations Grand Slam, you know, staying with the rugby, then beating New Zealand, obviously. And then Mullinocta is a massive story as well. Just, it's a brilliant feel-good story. And there's been loads over the summer as well. I mean, look, I don't know, maybe it is recency bias, but sure, that's the brilliant thing about sport. Every year it's a clean slate, it's a new canvas, and you can get excited about different things.
And that's what every year brings.
Each year is better
stories
than the next.
Every year does bring different stories. And as I say, if you're not involved in sport or looking at sport or tuning in the odd time, I'd love to know what you are doing.
Invictus, says someone. Enough said, sport is better than religion. And that's from a Westport woman.
I agree with you. I want to meet that woman.
At least Alan has sport, because he doesn't have a clue when it comes to music, says Owen. You are dead right. What that lad classifies as music taste.
Neil Diamond and Ronnie O'Sullivan. Where did you go wrong?
Okay, let's move on. Hi, lads. I want to congratulate... Well, by the way, we're going to talk to Clinton Morrison about the Premier League later on, including what happened to Raheem Sterling at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, which really just soured what was otherwise a brilliant, brilliant win for Chelsea, and it's thrown the title race right back open. Pep Guardiola not too happy, but we'll come back to that a little bit later on. Hi lads, I want to congratulate Mullinocta on a super win yesterday. They showed togetherness, discipline, determination and guts. Bring on Dr. Crokes. A happy Longford man, Jerry Smith. Met yourself and Alan in Croke Park at Longford against Dublin. Happy Christmas to you and yours, lads. Keep up the great work. Yeah, Jerry, it was great to meet you that time. I do remember it well.
I remember it well. Jerry was sound.
Yeah, and it was a brilliant win. It was a brilliant win. And of course, as usual with the GAA, if you want to get the essence of what it means to local people, you have to go to local radio. This was the commentary on Shannonside FM. Have a listen.
And now there's another shemazzle going on, and you know what? They can shemazzle all the feckin' well like, because Mullinocta are winning by 2 points, Liam.
Well, I'm not going to get another day out of this shirt, John, because it's actually sweating here now at this moment in time, and it's absolutely phenomenal. The back line, everything was phenomenal by Mullinocta. 1-8 players, 1-6, 2 point lead, dangerous lead, squeaky bum time, just get the ball out.
David McGivney is standing all alone away out here to the left, not all alone, but he's looking for
that's it.
And St. Columbus Mullinocta off Longford are the Leinster Senior Club Football Champions of 2018. It is absolutely brilliant. The little half parish from North Longford. Ahanolan, Clunat, Clunin, Colleen Moore, Derry Casson and Drumna Creer, Kilmore, Lackfield, Leitrim, Mullinroe and Toome are the 11 townlands that have beaten the 40,000 from Stirorgan or thereabouts. I think they have 4,000 members. Well, they're a great club, Kilmacud, and they fought every inch of the way, but it was 15 against 15. Mullinocta never lost faith.
My favourite line out of that is one of the co-coms worried that he's not going to get another day out of his shirt because the sweating that was going on.
Get that man a new shirt.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, look, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by John Keegan, midfielder from Mullinocta and, of course, a key member of the Leinster Club Championship winning side over the last few years. John, it's a pleasure to have you on.
No problem. Delighted to be here.
How are the celebrations going?
My father's obviously chairman of the club, and his phone and my own phone, they're absolutely humming this morning. But you look at it, it's great. Everybody, there's national coverage at the minute, and we had Marty Morrissey down to the school as well. So,
oh, you're blessed.
You know
you've made it when Marty turns up.
Yeah, so great excitement. But you look at it, Shane Mulligan said our captain a couple of weeks ago, people couldn't pronounce Mullinocta, but now it's rolling off the tongue. So I think we're trending on Twitter at this stage.
How was last week, the build-up to the game? We had Mickey on the show with us on Thursday night. He sounded very relaxed, said the players are very calm and focused, and really it was a kind of shot to nothing almost. There was no pressure because, I suppose, you're in bonus territory. Was that how you felt going into the game?
Yeah, I suppose I'd done a lot of interviews myself last week, and I kind of felt, even from talking to different people, that... I suppose it was great. It was a great story to David versus Goliath. It was a great story for the media to kind of roll in on. But I don't think anyone really believed that fairy tale was going to continue. I think everyone felt that, look, the odds are heavily stacked against us, and Kilmacud were going to put an end to that. But in that group of players, that band of brothers, as we call it, there was a real belief, and I think Mickey is core to that. That, you know, it's 60 minutes of football, and if we got close to our potential, we'd be hard beaten. And obviously, last week we played it down that, look, we're delighted to be there. And that was completely true. But In that group of players, there was a belief that if we stick in the game and we get close to our potential, we'd be there, thereabouts. And coming on to the end, if we're in touching distance of them at all, something will present itself. And luckily it did, and Gary done the business coming on to the end.
It literally is, John. You said band of brothers, but there's James and Dave McGivney, there's five McGilligots, Aidan, Keane, Connor, Dolan, Rory, there's Francis and Shane Mulligan, there's Patrick and Brendan Fox. So literally you are a squad made up predominantly of brothers, and the connection that must develop on from that has to be a huge part of your success this season.
Yeah, look, a lot of people ask what's the difference between yourselves and other teams, and not necessarily a difference, but what we have is unity, and there's a huge unity in that team, and as I said, a band of brothers. Myself, I was studying last year, went back to do an MBA, and so Mickey and the lads would have been very facilitating in, you know, they understand that you have other commitments that will try and move training to make sure that you can attend. And we try and accommodate people as best we possibly can. But every time we cross that white line, you know the lad beside you is going to put his shoulder to the wheel. There's going to be no stone left unturned in preparations. And look, we'll go out and stand beside each other, and thankfully yesterday got us across the line.
I mean, it's an overnight success in one way, but it's actually not, because you're obviously county champions 3 years in a row. You had a very good go against St Vincent's, Lowmans as well, where you had that lead and just couldn't put it away. So this is actually 3 years in the making for this team.
It is, yeah. I said earlier in the week, all I wanted to do was win one senior championship. In 2014-15, we're getting ourselves in positions to go and win games, but weren't seeing them out. We won a senior championship, and it was a childhood dream. That's all I ever wanted. I could retire there. And then we went on to do the double. We've done three in a row, and waking up this morning as Leinster champions. But very much a work in progress. I suppose the last couple of years, we, as you said, we got a taste for Leinster. We were after beating Stradbally and Lomond to get close to Vincent. And looked them up against a better team, a superior team that day. But I suppose the lads got a taste for Leinster. But it's very, very difficult. And we would have said before every game this year, lads, it's so hard to get here. So grab the game by the scruff of the neck. Don't let it pass you by. And let's put money out on the map. And look, it got us through the quarter final. It was a big game going to Tullamore to beat Roe. They would have been hot favourites to get to that Leinster final. That was a big one for us to kind of go on the road. We had all the ones were home games to date. So to go to Tullamore and get a win against a big club team in Leinster was a big one for us. And then, got to the final and got across the line yesterday. It's fairy tale stuff. I think it'll probably be Christmas till we look back and appreciate what's actually after happening here.
That's totally understandable. And like, you know, you mentioned the David versus Goliath line that the media used to build up to the game, and I suppose that was a natural pickup, because you look at this, the size of Mullinocta, and you know, Kilmacud Crokes have 4,800 members. You guys have 114 adult members of the club, and I was, you know, looking at yourself, your own story. You know, you mentioned working from Dublin, the consultancy work that you do, the commitment that you have to make yourself. There's a lot of guys in the team who also have to do likewise just to get to training, and if one or two members of that chain, if one or two links of that chain don't fulfil those commitments, John, I imagine the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, we're very stretched. I think it's been well documented that we've stayed injury free, which is a miracle in itself, really. You know, you usually pick up some niggles along the way, but we've been very, very lucky. I suppose testament to the lads to be doing their own work off the pitch as well, but we'd be very reliant on absolutely everybody that we have. And in fairness, everybody's made a commitment, everybody makes the sacrifices, they're down. We meet collectively 3 days a week, and then you'd be doing your own bits on the side, but everybody makes those commitments. And look at it, in GAA, and I suppose in small clubs like Mullinocta, but in small counties like Longford, those commitments can go unrewarded a lot of the time. But thankfully, I'm just delighted for this group of players that they're reaping their rewards at the minute.
Did you think Gary was going to get that penalty? Be honest. Well,
did I think he was going to score the penalty?
Yeah, did you think he was going to score it?
I actually didn't look at it.
Did you not?
No, I actually rolled my ankle right before the penalty was given.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get out of the way, because I knew Gary wasn't the man for standing over the ball. He just wanted to kick it as quick as he possibly could. So I wanted to get out of the way. The physio was telling me to sit down. I was like, no, get me out of here. Well, Gary's very calm. We had actually said, I think the Crofts keeper had said that his right side was his favourite after the Portlaoise save, because he had obviously made a big save in the Portlaoise game.
Yeah.
So we told Gary go the other way, but Gary obviously had other ideas. He stuck it in the corner, but look, at I seen it on the replays, and cool as you want. And at the minute he kicked it, he's straight out, straight back to work. He's looking, where's his man? But that's just Gary Rogers. He loves finds hard work, and just delighted he was able to put it away.
Were you surprised, John, that the Kilmacud played the way they did in the last kind of quarter or so? You know, the wind at their backs, I think a lot of people watching the game expected them to try and push on and just to see out the game and just open up a bit of a lead that you guys wouldn't come back from, but they actually kind of retreated a bit into a shell. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I suppose I was surprised. We had a big wind in the first half, and I suppose when we were in at half time for the first 5 minutes, the heads would have been down a little bit. We probably would have felt that we should have had a bigger lead. We had a few silly whites, but it was a difficult wind. But then I suppose they were playing with fire there, with they're only 2 points up. They started to play the ball around the middle. It's always a dangerous game to play. But look, we got our chance, and I suppose you have to take it when it comes.
Yeah.
And obviously it was a big drive. I think it started back at the corner back. It was a nice run of play for the penalty to evolve. And yeah, thankfully Gary just stood up. But look, I think it's easy to say Croke should have done this or that. I suppose all you can play is the ball in front of your face.
Exactly. And you had to make it happen as well. I mean, it wasn't that they gave it to you, you know.
It's difficult at the time.
Before I let you go back and enjoy the celebrations, Mickey Graham, just tell me about how crucial a figure he has been in all this.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I think we before Mickey came, we were always in a position, we were knocking on the door, we were in a position with 10 minutes to go to close out games, so we were always falling short. And Mickey brought a bit of experience and instilled a sense of confidence in players that maybe would have doubted themselves, questioned themselves, am I good enough, am I out of my league here, and would have instilled a huge amount of confidence and belief and determination in the lads that not only are we good enough to take part here, we can push on here and be one of the best clubs. And try and comprehend that you're one of the best clubs now in Leinster. It's phenomenal stuff, but a huge amount of work of that is down to Mickey Graham. I think Cavan have done very well in getting Mickey Graham. He leaves no stone unturned. His preparation is absolutely phenomenal. And look, at Mickey Graham will always be a welcome name and a welcome man in the parish of Mullinata. He can... I don't think he's buying too many points this weekend.
No, definitely not. And look, speaking of which, Guido really kind of set down the market with the old celebration. So you guys are going to have to give Kevin Cassidy and the boys a bit of a run for this week. You know that?
Yeah, I think the lads are treating Kevin Cassidy to find out is he left or right. But I think he is a Twitter thing going at the minute. But the covers wouldn't be great on Mullinata. So
okay.
That's great.
All right, we'll keep it quiet. So look, John, I really appreciate your time. A fantastic win. And look, best of luck as well in the semi-final. We'll talk to you, I'm sure, before that. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, appreciate it, thank you.
Yeah, super. Harry Les, what about Mickey Graham? Yeah, well, we did ask him about that, and we had Mickey on the show last Thursday looking ahead as well, so yeah, it's just brilliant for everyone. Fantastic win yesterday. So someone else, John O'Connor, it wasn't a smash and grab job, the best team won by far. It was a fantastic example of how Gaelic football should be played. Someone else, great achievement in Mullinocta in all fairness, but holy God, the Kilmacud throw that away. Well on the way, 4 minutes to go, I guarantee you Ballymun or Vincent's would never cave in at that late stage. They thought they had it in the bag once again, but fair play to Mull for playing to the final whistle. And I'm no dub either, so there's just two contrasting views, I suppose. And someone else just says, Alan, tell Alan it's women and booze over sport. That reminds me of do you remember Alan Partridge, where he's talking to his son Fernando on the phone? He says, Fernando, it's a beautiful day outside and you're spending your afternoons inside with a woman. You're wasting your life. Keeper text coming in. There's loads more about the football, which I'll get back to later on with Clinton Morrison when he's on the line. But I'm delighted to say we have Andy McEntee with us as well. Andy, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, lads. Yeah.
So look, just a quick word on Mullinocta there. I mean, it's the story of the weekend. It's nearly the story of the year. I mean, it's just when you put it into context of what they've managed to do, Andy, it's brilliant.
Oh, look at it. It's an incredible achievement. And I suppose it really it epitomises what the GAA is about. I mean, you're looking at the team, a village with the population and the adult membership that you spoke about there, come up against one of the, if not the biggest club in the country. And I suppose it just goes to show you, on any given day, 15 against 15, anything is possible.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think they're going to be celebrating for quite some time. Look, what did you make of your match of the weekend? 3-11 to 6 points against Leash in the O'Byrne Cup, and the conditions. I was talking to Bernard Flynn yesterday, Andy, and he said the conditions were absolutely horrendous.
They certainly were. The warm-up, or if you could call it a warm-up, it was absolutely horrendous. The rain was coming in sideways. There was a gale-force wind blowing. And as such, I suppose, it didn't, to use it as a sample size for the new rules, is probably a bad example, if you like. But the game itself was okay. I think both teams really had a bit of a cut at it, but it really would be a poor example and to try and take anything from it. I mean, the idea of the mark trying to kick it 40 or 50 yards in the first place was an issue, but for somebody to hold it at the far end of it was definitely an issue.
Yeah, it seemed to, and I heard a few other managers speak about it as well. These new trial rules seem to be pretty negligible in terms of the influence that they've had on games over the weekend. Is that how you'd sum it up? And maybe we need to give it more time to see fully how they're going to be implemented and the difference they're going to make.
Yeah, as I say, a couple of games over the weekend in a Burn Cup is not really a big enough sample to be coming to any sort of conclusive decisions. But at the same time, I think everybody has reservations about some of the rules. I suppose the bottom line is we got to give it a shot. I'm not overly pleased about the way that the adopted set of rules were introduced without any consultation, without any trial period. Whereas, you know, the initial rules were well spoken about. There were a number of games played at school level, at college levels. We played a game. Managers were consulted. Players were consulted, whereas when the rules committee were asked to go and come up with a couple of alternatives, they came back with alternatives, and obviously the decision was, yeah, we'll just run with those. So that's the bit that bugs me as much as anything else. But I suppose we've got to, you know, they're in, we have to have a cut of them and see where it takes us.
The underlying reason for these seems to be to try and make the game more exciting, to try and put more emphasis on attacking football and move away from the blanket defence, I suppose. Andy, I don't know if you read, there was a piece, and I'm just racking my brains here, just off the top of my head, trying to remember who wrote it, and maybe it'll come back to me, about a suggestion that the author of the piece seems to think will solve all the problems, which is basically no back pass to the goalkeeper. So by eliminating the back pass to the goalkeeper, you'll get less short kickouts, because the goalkeeper will be afraid of their life if they kick it short to one of the cornerbacks and can't get the ball back, that they'd be caught, turned over and get a score away. So it'll force the goalkeepers to kick the ball long, and it'll push players up further up the field and force them to attack more, rather than starting from the back, you know, passing the ball around, taking their time in the build-up, possession-based football. And that, with one swift stroke, would solve an awful lot of problems. What do you think on the face of it? Is that something that
you should consider? I think he has a fair point there. I mean, I think you're right in saying that the purpose of these rule changes would be to eliminate blanket defence and negative play and side-to-side play and, you know, possession play. And one could make the argument that it's actually going to make it even worse, because if you can't have a series of consecutive hand passes, you know, within shooting distance of the goals, it'll encourage blanket defence.
Yeah.
You get back to how do you beat a blanket defence except maybe a couple of quick hand passes, quick hands here and there, a little bit of extra movement, and you create an opening. Now, if it's restricted to three hand passes, There really is a case for having a crowded defence. And the other side of it is, I mean, if you want to have a mark, I couldn't ask my players, I couldn't afford to allow the opposition catch a clean ball inside 40 yards.
Yeah.
Chances are to score every time.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You're going to play one in front and one behind. And if you're coming up against a team who has three or four big target men, again, it's going to say, okay, we can't afford to let the likes of Michael Murphy or someone like that catch the ball inside the 45-metre line, because you have to stand off them and it's a score.
It doesn't sound you're too optimistic that these are going to have any kind of real impact, or at least do what they're designed to do.
Yeah, I think they'll have an impact, all right. I think I can get over the hand pass rule. I think we'll get around that. I think maybe tinker with it a little bit. I think we'll get around that. I would say it seems to encourage a little bit of more kicking earlier on. The fellas get their heads around it properly. I mean, there's loads of occasions where a guy could make a relatively decent foot pass instead of taking the option of a short hand pass. So, I mean, I can see that working to a certain extent. But I think the rule that could change the dynamic of the game as such is the mark inside 40 metres, whereby you could have someone like Rory Beggan kicking the ball out.
Mm-hmm.
70 yards, caught in the middle of the field, you have to step off. Fella kicks it another 40 yards, it's caught at the other end, you have to step off and it's kicked over the bar.
Andy, your vision and, I suppose, philosophy on the game and how it should be played and what you've been encouraging the lads since you've been involved with Meath, how much do these changes kind of make you veer away from that, or is it just a case of adapting, or is it frustrating sometimes all these rule changes that sometimes it seems it's change for change's sake?
It's a little bit frustrating, and if the truth be known, the feedback that we get from the players is that it's a little bit frustrating. And, you know, having spoken to a couple of them, you know, talking about what, you know, is the game that bad?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go back to the best game of football that was supposedly ever played was the All-Ireland semi-final in 1977. And if you sat down and analysed that, there was a lot of pretty poor stuff in that too. So you're always, I mean, everyone's kind of looking at things are always better and there's no catching and kicking anymore, and that's all very fine, and I do agree the games where the ball is continuously going side to side and we're looking at possession, it's not a great spectacle. But is the National League the place to tinker with that? It's arguably the best competition that we have.
Yeah.
For 80 to 85% of the teams in the country, it's their main competition. And now we're making an experiment out of it. And that's the bit that kind of bugs me. You know, if you're going to make a real experiment out of it, does that mean you suspend the outcome of it? Because, you know, within 3 or 4 weeks, we're going back to playing a different game.
I presume and I hope, Andy, that you're going to get a huge crowd at Park Charlton on Sunday the 16th. So this is Dublin against Meath. There's a fundraiser for Sean Cox, the Liverpool fan who everyone remembers the horrific incident that happened to him going to a match, and as he continues with his recovery. But I'm hoping at least that you're going to get a massive turnout here in support for this night.
Oh, I hope so. I think it's a great opportunity for certainly for Meath people and for Dublin people to get out and support a really good cause, but also to see, from our point of view, to see Dublin coming down to Navan is always a great occasion. Well, it used to be a great occasion. It hasn't happened often enough in the recent past. But we'd like to make a really good occasion out of this, not just money. I'd love to be able to turn around next week and for Martina, Sean's wife, maybe to bring a video into Sean and see a packed out Park Charlton.
Yeah.
And see, does that spark any sort of reaction with Sean himself?
Yeah, well, we're expecting 10,000, I think, at the moment, but we're going to tweet out a link as well to tickets and the GoFundMe page as well if anyone wants to help out. Andy, it's great to talk to you. We didn't even get to mention the 5 debutants on the team, but we'll do it again maybe after Christmas if that's okay, and best of luck with the rest of the O'Byrne Cup and towards the league as well.
Yeah, thanks, lads. Thanks
Super.
Very much. Appreciate
thanks
it.
A million. Super. Andy McEntee there. Yeah, Meath off to a good start in the O'Byrne Cup. Just a couple of texts in on this one. Lads, please don't let managers try and get rid of the introduction of the new rules. Give them a fair try, including the sin bin. The previous attempts at rule changes were scuppered by, among others, two good friends of mine, Mick O'Dwyer and Sean Boylan, says Gustavus Patrick in Kildare. Well, look, the rules are going to be trialled, and that's here to say, but I can understand certainly managers' frustrations how they're brought in. And I just question, you know, are they going to solve the problems that they're being brought in to try and solve?
I'm kind of half and half. I'm a little bit with Andy as well. Is the game that bad? And I know we see some games where he's saying side to side, whatever, but I don't think it's as bad as they make out, that you have to be seen to be making changes left, right and centre. That's, and I'm just speaking as a fan going to watch the games.
Yeah.
They don't seem all that bad to me.
Okay, 51552 is our text number. We've got Premier League, we've got rugby and racing after these.
Game on 2FM
with Gillette. Pro Shield chills, shields and cools with blade lubrication. A real winner. Gillette, the best a man can get.
William Wexford says, 20 minutes into the show and not one mention of United. Where's Alan? He's here. We have a muzzle on him, Willie. I tell you, no United tonight. No, more important things to talk about. And Madden Galway says, lads, the bottom line is something has to change in football. So all the geniuses football is supposed to be about, stop whinging and start coaching players how to play the game properly again. And yeah, a few more on the same lines of that. Okay, we're going to move on because James Downey is on the line after a clean sweep for the Irish provinces in Europe, 3 in the Champions Cup, and Connacht doing the business against Perpignan in the Challenge Cup. James, how are you?
Very good, Hugh. Alan, you're right.
Hi, James.
Not too bad. That was pretty dire stuff to watch yesterday, I have to say, James. But Munster did what they had to do. It was an arm wrestle. That's what they were expecting. And they came out on top. So everybody happy?
I think they've actually are going to be kicking themselves a little bit. I think they left the bonus point out there. Look, first half was probably one of the worst 40 minutes I've seen in a while on both sides. Just a lot of errors. Just Munster tried to kill the game off nice and early, tried to get the crowd behind them. But I think it's something to do with that 1 o'clock kickoff as well. It just doesn't have the same atmosphere or vibe that you'd normally get at a Thomond Park game. And
is that really a thing, James? Is it really a thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've played in those when it was 12:45 games, and you're just out of sync in everything you're doing. You go to bed the night before as normal, but you're up at whatever, 6:30, 6:30, 7:00, and then you have to have a full meal at that time. It's hard to kind of sit there and force feed yourself chicken and pasta. And
Alan does that 5 days a week, and he's grand. Not a bother on him.
Yeah, James, not a pick on him. Yeah, exactly.
James, what time do these lads train every morning? I presume they train in the morning, not the full-time lads, yeah.
Yeah, you are, of course. Okay, you're up at that time, that's fine, but you're still not eating a full meal, a full dinner at that time in the morning.
So are you basing that more down to the refueling of their body, or the time of the match that the atmosphere is not great just in the morning or during the day kind of thing?
Yeah, I think everything. I think it's a small bit of everything. I think you're not in your own bed. Okay, these are small gripes, I suppose, but I think it all has an effect. You're not in your own bed for a starter. When you're all in a hotel together, everyone's a little bit giddy European nights, and you might call over to one of your lads' rooms and chat away, and you're not in your normal sleeping patterns, and you're up that earlier because obviously you're apprehensive about the game the next day. You're thinking about the game. You don't get a proper sleep, and I do think it has an impact. And then the food as well. That was me personally anyway. I struggled with that, and I would never sleep as well as I would in my own bed. And I think the crowd as well. The crowd are a little bit, I don't know, maybe they haven't had a couple of drinks at that hour in the morning, so it's a very different atmosphere. And I think they just tried to force it. I think they tried to force something early to try and get an early score, try and kill off cash, and they couldn't do that until early in the second half.
Yeah, and it goes back to that. It's a bit of a stereotype, really, at the moment, the French teams and the fitness. But certainly in the last half an hour, Cass did look tired and spent and almost giving up the goals, whereas Munster just clicked into gear at that stage.
Yeah, but look, I think there was only one side in it. And realistically, I don't think Cass fired a shot until the last 5 or 10 minutes when the game was out of reach. Cass didn't get into Munster's 22 in the first half at all, which is nearly unheard of. They had no possessions, and the one possession they did do was actually when the out half missed a kick, a goal, and Conor Murray knocked it on in the goal line, in the dead ball line. So they got a scrum in the five, and that was due to a Munster mistake, and that was the first approach into the Munster's 22. And you're not going to win a game doing that. I expected a lot more from Cash, actually. Top 14 champions last year, and just didn't fire. I do expect them to be a different creature back in Cash, though. I think they'll have looked at that. The home supporters will have looked at that, will expect a reaction, and especially back at home, they're a completely different side.
Yeah, and I do think it'll be tougher next week. But in terms of the game, and you just mentioned there you were expecting more from Cash, so was I, to be honest with you, James. And yesterday, ESPN stats, right, two of the Cash starting backline players hadn't touched the ball with an hour gone on the clock.
Yeah, I can well imagine that. Again, the errors that were there, the small errors, schoolboy errors, if you want to call them, simple things, like how many knock-ons in the first half off high ball, simple catches under no pressure. These are, okay, when you see it on TV, it looks a lot different. I was at the ground and there was a swirling wind. It does look... on TV like that these are professional players, they shouldn't be making these mistakes. Yeah, but the wind didn't help, but still. I just think that the basic errors that both sides were making, more so Cash, but basic errors under no pressure was quite criminal at stages. And yeah, as you say, when certain players aren't touching the ball, it's yeah, of course they're not going to win, but I think Munster are just going to be kicking themselves for leaving that bonus point.
Yeah, and let's see what happens when they go to France next weekend. Leinster had a battle as well in their hands, so I mean, I said the clean sweep, but actually probably the most impressive side of the weekend were Ulster on Friday night. But Leinster, again, they just had to kind of dig deep here and fight this one out. I think Bath were a lot better than maybe some Leinster supporters were giving them credit for going into the match.
Yeah, Bath have been just ticking along nicely in the, like, they're sixth in the Premiership. I watched them the week before against Sale in another horrendous game.
7-7 draw or something, wasn't it?
Just changed to summer rugby that we need to do. 7-7 against Sale. But it's one of these where Bath are always going to pick it up. You've Gervin Dempsey there, the pre-match speech writes itself. You know, Gerv will have the inside track on a lot of things. He'll know how to stop Leinster. And actually, I think they did a very successful job. And I think other teams, if they look at how Bath played, slowed the ball down at the breakdown, really targeted Leinster. And Leinster, at times, can look ordinary. I know we build up Leinster to be such a big team, but I actually think that Bath got in amongst them. And as I say, slow the ball down, get your line speed together and get your defence numbers up. You can put them under pressure. And only for an opportune interception from Jordan Larmour, it could have been a different story.
On the breakdown, James, that's interesting, because Dan Levy was picked at number 8, and I have to say I was surprised myself when I saw that. And I saw Jack Conlon on the bench and I said, what's going on here? And people might have assumed that because they had effectively, you know, certainly two open sides in Van der Freer and Levy playing at 7 and 8, and then Rhys Ruddock as well at 6, that Leinster were going to clean up at the breakdown, but it didn't happen like that. And I was wondering, was the absence of a ball-carrying number 8 a big reason for that?
Perhaps. I think they went in with the mindset to actually nullify. If you look at Sam Underhill and Francois Lowe, they're grafters, especially Francois Lowe, who, the way they work in tandem quite well. One chops low and the other guy goes for the ball. And I think they said, right, if we combat that, we negate that with 2 sevens, we'll get parity. As long as we get parity, if not more, we'll be fine. And it didn't happen. And I do think that Jack Conan did well then when he came on for Dan Levy. But I don't think it's the end of the experiment at all with that. But I'm sure Jack Conan was chomping at the bit to get off the bench, having not started, you know. But yeah, it was certainly an area that they'd seen that Bath targeted, but also Leinster may have reacted to when, having looked at the side that Bath had picked.
Yeah, and just finally then Ulster, I mentioned they were brilliant on Friday night. First win in 6 years in the Scarlets. They were fantastic.
Yeah, hugely impressive. And I think you look at over the past couple of years, Ulster's practice haven't really delivered. They've always been calling out for some impact players, I think, and I suppose Kotze is back now, which is great. He's nearly like a fresh player, having been injured for so much over the last couple of years. But I just think that, like, they're slowly going about their business, they're simmering away, people aren't expecting much from them, so I don't think the pressure's there. But some of the players, I thought Will Addison had another superb game.
Brilliant.
He's a hell of a find, you know. I remember him playing over in Sale, and he didn't necessarily mark him, or he didn't stand out that much over in the UK, but look, when he did, he was made captain, so they obviously held him in high regard. He's still a young guy, you know, he's only 25, is he?
Yeah.
And since he's come over here, I just think he's been immense. And everything he did, and especially against Jonathan Davies at the weekend, he's got that versatility to play 15 as well.
Yeah.
And he's just another one of those players who can add so much more. That's from an Irish point of view. But Ulster, I thought, look, to go over there and do that, that's a superb performance from them. And slowly but surely, Dan McFarland seems to be getting him into the way he wants to play. And as long as they can back it up this week, I expect them to, but Scarlets won't be happy having lost at home like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And 3 big games again this weekend. James, thanks a million. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks a lot. Super, James Downey there. Right, let's go for a quick break. We're back with Clinton and Alan on the Premier League.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Pro Shield. Chills, shields and cools with blade lubrication. A real winner. Gillette. The best a man can get.
Okay, Alan Colley's with me in studio and Clinton Morrison is on the line. Clinton, how are you?
I'm all right. Not too bad.
What did you make of Manchester City's dramatic fall from grace? Huh? They're finished, Clinton.
I know. I kind of predicted them to go through the whole season unbeaten. So I said their toughest game would be the next Liverpool game. But to be fair, going to Chelsea, Stamford Bridge, it was always going to be a difficult game. But I just thought Chelsea were not in good form, having lost 2 of the last 3 games. But finally, City still played well, but just back of the net, but they thoroughly deserved it, to be fair to them. Man City, Chelsea, I thought they were class on today, defended really well and played counter-attacking football, and some of the passing at times was very good.
Alan, Pep Guardiola said he's played an awful lot better, also a lot worse than that, and actually won the game. So
yeah, for the first 44 minutes they were unbelievable, Hugh. They were past Chelsea off the pitch, created two or three great chances. No Aguero, no Jesus.
No, that's, De Bruyne still.
Yeah, that's beginning to hurt them a little bit. But I didn't realise, Clinton, that you tipped them to go the season unbeaten, but because I was critical of people that did that last week. I just didn't understand how people were saying, give them the trophy now. Like, we're only in, it was the 87th.
But they have been so much better than every other team.
But still, Hugh, like, you look at Liverpool, right? Even though they haven't been setting the world alight, since the inception of the Premier League started, it's been, I think, only six teams have had a better start than Liverpool. So it just goes to show you how well City have been playing. But Liverpool have been doing really well too. Defensively, they're very good. Going forward, fair enough, they haven't been as good as last year. But they clicked on Saturday. Salah, if he's to come into the form that we've seen with him last year, who knows what they can do. But it was too many people were saying, oh, give it to them now. You can't do it. Look what we've seen yesterday in the Gaelic, that story. You just can't say, like, oh, that's it, hand over the trophy.
Clinton, Liverpool winning, obviously, and coupled with City's loss means that the title race now is back on a fine knife edge. And it's great, I have to say. If Man City had started to run away with this thing, I think we'd all just be bored by February, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Al makes a good point. It was only because I was asked about, did I think? And I did think at that time, the way they were playing, even though they've not hit top form and they are missing their best player, Kevin De Bruyne, I just thought no team could compete with them. I even went and watched them when they played Bournemouth recently. They weren't at their best, but still came away with a victory. So that's why I kind of tipped them. But he's right, Liverpool have been playing not particularly to high standards, and Salah hasn't been on his best form at the minute. And then he turned up on the weekend, so if he gets going, then it's a great title race. I wouldn't rule anyone out now. I would still put Tottenham in it if they can make a few signings come January, and Chelsea as well. I would throw Arsenal into the mix, but I don't think they're quite ready at the moment. I don't think defensively probably strong enough, but going forward, Arsenal look really good. So I like it like that anyway. The Premier League's wide open. We don't want Man City running away. And as you said, by February, March, it's all over. At least it makes it exciting and interesting.
Chelsea have suspended four supporters, Clinton, after the match. Investigations into allegations of racial abuse towards Raheem Sterling. We all saw the pictures of the guys leaning over, and it looked like pretty disgusting stuff coming out of their mouths as well. Yeah. I mean, is this something you can relate to? How did you feel when you saw that?
It's a disgrace, to be fair. I think Sterling's handled it ever so well. The thing with it's starting to get into the English football at the moment is it's happening too often. Aubameyang, how can you possibly carry a banana? And I'm not saying you shouldn't carry it into the ground, but the guy, when he threw it, he said he didn't realise when he threw it what the implications were going to be.
Well,
if you throw a banana at a black person, you know what's going to happen. That is 60s and 70s, so it's like we're going back to the dinosaur years. And Chelsea, it's always been Chelsea Football Club, it's always been kind of a racist ground to go and play football at times, and I thought it was starting to change and evolve, but the scenes were disgusting. But you know what, fair play to Raheem Sterling, he dealt with it really well. He kind of washed that under the table and then started coming criticising the press. The press do give him over here in England, they give him some terrible stick for no reason. Like, he could be in a pound shop buying something in a pound shop. So what? He's flying Ryanair because he's on whatever money a week. They think he should be going into other bigger shops or flying with like first class everywhere he should go. He's just trying to be a normal person. So I think he's handled the situation really well.
Back in May of this year, a guy called Adam Keyworth on Twitter compiled a list of the tabloid allegations directed at Raheem Sterling, right? So just running out a couple of them here. So number one, the one where Raheem was tired. Tired Raheem at 3 a.m. Three Lions party, says the Sun. Number two, the one where Raheem was labelled football idiot for no apparent reason. The headline says, from troubled youth to 100k a week, the life of footy idiot Raheem Sterling, also the Sun. Another one, don't be so greedy, cop offer 20k for Raheem, he wants 50k. The one where Raheem was greedy for wanting a pay rise because he had a very successful season. Number four, the one where Raheem was obscene, having bought his mum a nice sink out of his own money. The headline in the Sun is, England failure steps off plane and insults fans by showing off blinging house, obscene. Another one from the Sun, the one where Raheem was obscene, having bought his mum a nice sink, same one. Manchester City star Raheem Sterling earns 200 grand a week but takes £80 EasyJet flight back from holiday. It goes on and on and on. And the media have a massive role to play in this, do they not?
It's embarrassing. All of that you just said, it's a shambles. The media do have a massive role because they're only directly picking on him. They're not picking on any other individual. If he wants to buy his mama house, so be it. Buy your mama house. I did it. I bought my mama house when I was playing.
That's obscene, Clinton. That's obscene.
It is obscene now. It is. I'm not allowed to do that at my house. I'm a disgrace, to be fair. One thing, all right, being it's a bit different, this one, but it's kind of on that side. I chose to play for Ireland. So being a black man, I was born in England. It was totally going to... I knew for a fact when I went to Ireland, it could either go one way. They could either love me or could get a bit of stick because I can understand... over there that, yeah, a black man playing for Ireland is totally different. And there was, but 9 times out of 10, I'd say the majority of people in Ireland were all brilliant to me and loved me for playing for Ireland and stuff like that. The only time I got racially abused was playing for Ireland in Russia. But I knew straight away when I got out there that I was going to get sick. But the best thing I did is put the ball in the back of the net. And it probably made them do it even more. But I think certain times... I would deal with how Raheem Sterling would deal with it. Just ignore them. Carry on doing my business on the pitch because those small-minded people are not going to get the better of me. But we have to get... Something has to be done because it's starting to get a bit worse over here. We thought that had gone in the 60s and 70s and it is getting bad. So something needs to be done and that's from the PFA upwards and everyone else getting involved and trying to stop this kind of behaviour. And I agree, ban these fans when they do it for life because it's a disgrace.
Clinton, that's what I wanted to ask you, just from your personal experience, because obviously you see Gary Lineker, Ian Wright, Rio Ferdinand, lots of big high profile players coming out, and they're suggesting that we're going back to the 80s or it's as bad again. In your personal experience, from the strides that they've made, or has there been strides made, do you think we're going back there, or are things a lot better now?
No, I did think it was starting to get better now, but obviously you're always going to get a few small-minded ones, but in the last few weeks we've had 2 incidents, so slowly but surely it looks like we are getting back to it. And as I said, when I was playing, we used to always go to Millwall and get it every week at Millwall. You didn't even want to go down the touchline and chase the ball once because fans were so bad. But these are small... These are small-minded people and not going to affect me, but it is a disgrace. It's only a colour of our skin. We're still all natural human beings. We should all stick together and try to fight this. It is a disgrace, though. The scenes are...
Clinton, you mentioned two clubs there. Millwall, who we all know their history and some of the stuff that's got... And Chelsea, who are renowned sometimes for this. Is it just a small element, or is it unfair that everybody gets tired with the same brush, or do you think it's a serious problem amongst a whole host of clubs?
Well, it is a whole month. I would never have thought Tottenham would have done that, Tottenham fans being that, but it was a Tottenham fan who did it to Aubameyang. So I think you're going to get... I wouldn't say every club out, you'll always get one racist, because there's still people, old fans that are going that think when it was in the 60s or 70s that some even black people couldn't ride on the same bus as certain people or couldn't work in the same environment as people. So that's times have changed now. You have to move on. Everyone has to move on and be together and stick together. And it has. I thought it had gone, not totally gone, but these last 2 seasons have not been good for football anyway. Definitely in the Premier League, it's not been good. And it is a disgrace. You expect that more when you go abroad. Because abroad's totally different, but here in England, it's just got to change. It's not good enough. And as I said, it's like Raheem Sterling. He just stood there and he's getting and you know me, Al, I'm a bit of a hothead. I don't know if nowadays I probably would have been able to stand there and take it. They were that close to me, and he just got on with it and then wrote on his Instagram page, which I thought was a great response. He just kind of washed that under the thing, and he's right about the media. So what if Foden is buying a house for 2 points and Arabeo's buying one for his month for 2 points, but he's played about 2 games and Foden's played 13. It doesn't matter, man. At the end of the day, he's got that 25 grand a week or whatever he's on, and he wants to buy his mum a nice house. Why are the media making a big deal out of it? And it does look like that because he's a black person and he's a white boy, that they've made it like that. It might not have come, the media might not want it to come out like that, but it has come out like that. And I think Sterling's right to have a moan about it because he's probably had 6 or 7 things and he's actually put it out there. And the two players have replied on his Instagram saying fair play to him, and emojis and good hand, the hand sign with the emojis going up. So I think it's a great point, but I think Raheem Sterling, he's been the bigger person and he's gone on to be a better player and he's a better human being for all of this anyway.
Well said, Clinton. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks a million.
Cheers, no worries, Clinton. Take care. All
thanks
right.
A lot, Clinton Morrison. It's just, look, it's amazing.
We've spoken about it a lot, the Raheem Sterling stuff. Like,
that's gutter crap
the way he handled the thing.
It's mostly the son as well.
And that's what the common denominator there. We all know the newspaper. It's horrendous.
I heard Neil Costa is trying to defend the papers on TalkSport this morning, and he just.
But this kid has been targeted over a lengthy period of time now. We're going back 18 months.
Systemic
2 years.
Racial profiling and abuse directed at, and this is, and then they say, "Oh, how has this happened? It's 2018. How is this happening? That's why it's happening." Mm. Because this stuff has been festered and cultivated in the media and hidden under slight slurs, or, you know, trying to mask it off as something else, and then they can jump to the fence. Oh, it's not racism. We're just saying, you know, it's just a story.
And he should be applauded for it, because Clinton's right. The resilience he showed, he's handled it so classy, so dignified. It's a disgrace, the targeting that young kid.
Keith says, Hugh, what a fantastic performance by Altior. Still unbeaten over obstacles. Ruby at his cutest and undersold, but Altior still only hands and heels from the last to win snugly. That supreme novice form looking better and better. Altior, Min, Bouverdere, 1, 2, 3, not to mention Petit Mouchoir, Charbel, Super Sunday and Bells Hill, who have all progressed. Great race, great stuff, Keith. And Don McLean is on the line to talk about this. Hey, Don.
Hi, Hugh.
It was very impressive, wasn't it, from Altior?
it was. Yeah. I thought there was a chance to get beaten his first. Like, you know, there were reasons for believing that he might have been vulnerable beforehand. The ground is his first run, and Sandown is running the celebration chase there in April wasn't his most impressive. He only beat San Benedetto by about 3 lengths. So, I was thinking maybe at odds on he was opposable, but no, not at all. He was brilliant, and Ruby Walsh did all. He used every piece of arsenal at his disposal to try and get him beaten. He sat behind St. Calvados to begin with, and then he kicked on, and Anderson was very good, and he had his ground, but Altior just stalked him, and like, there was no point in the race, Walter, when you thought he wasn't going to win.
I have to say, Don, I tell you what, jump in the second last. I thought, oh God, because I was watching on the show more than Altior, and I thought, he's going so well here.
Yeah.
And then my eye was drawn to Altior. But for a split second, I thought on the show might actually do it.
Yeah, but like, Altior does that. Like, remember in the Champion Chase last year, he came down the hill, he looked long odds against the win, and then once he turned for home, his turbo just kicked in, and he came clear. He's an unbelievable. Like, he's now, that's 15 wins over hurdles and fences. He's never been beaten over hurdles and fences. The last time he got beaten was in the Punchestown Bumper a few years ago. So he's a monster. Really.
He's 15-8 to go unbeaten for the rest of the season. I mean, that's to me. I can't see anything. I'm looking at the 2 mile chase in division, Don, and you know, Footpad. We're hoping obviously we'll get over his last little blip and come back to be the horse that we hope he can be. But even on his best, we don't know if he can beat Altior. Undersold is just too old now. I mean, you look at Great Field. Obviously, it was yesterday, was very disappointing. And then, is there anything else really that comes into the mix here?
No, if he stays sound, and look, we know how fragile horses are, and you know, as long as he stays sound. And I suppose if you're taking him on and thinking he might get beaten, maybe you're relying on them stepping off and trip to 3 mile. Like, I know the King George, he still entered the King George, but Nicky Henderson seemed to scotch that today. He seemed to say, look, there's no way he's gone. Why would you? You know, he's so good at 2 miles. He's unbeatable at 2 miles. He's unbeaten at 2 miles. So why, you know, go and win another few champion chases? And, even Nicky Henderson was putting him in the same breath as Sprinter Sacker. And, like, there's just no telling how he'll go. Like, he's eight rising nine, but he's probably, like, that run on Saturday was up there with his best ever, I'd say.
What did you think of Min in the John Durkin yesterday?
I thought he was very good. Yeah, he they didn't go a massive fast pace early on. It didn't appear to him. He was a little bit keen, and it got interesting then when Ruby went to come between the Jigginstown horses and Jack Kennedy kept him in. And in fairness to Ruby, he said afterwards that he kind of respected Jack Kennedy for that. That's how he would have ridden.
Damn right.
Exactly.
Nothing easy here.
Exactly. And why would it be? It's a Grade One race. But then he got the gap on the inside of Balcudder Flow. He was travelling better than Balcudder Flow, so he was able to get there before the fence. And then Min picked up and he came clear. And, you know, 2.5 miles. Look, he was as good over 2.5 as he was over 2. That was his first run. So, no, that was a really, really good performance. Pity Presenting Percy didn't run. We did miss him from the race, but it was still a cracking race with him and Shattered Love then staying on for second as well.
Yeah, brilliant. And look, I know Lawler disappointed a lot of people, but I have to say, I wasn't convinced of the last one. And Mengli Khan is my horse for the Argyle Don. I think Mengli Khan is the one to beat. The more I see of the rest of them, I think, I know Kalashnikov is very good, but Mengli Khan could be the one to be on.
Yeah, he could. And Getabird was very good yesterday.
Yeah,
well,
he was.
Lawler disappointed. That I suppose that brings Dynamo Dollars into it a little bit. But, you know, you mentioned Kalashnikov. and by the rival Willys as well. So no, it's the Arkle at all with a fascinating base on it. So as long as the seat yesterday probably makes it even a wee bit more interesting than it would have been.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to do our Friday night racing on Thursday because we've no show on Friday because the 2FM Christmas ball is on. So Don, we'll talk to you and Jane on Thursday night. Thanks a million.
Great, thanks Hugh.
Super, Don McLean there. Yeah, brilliant weekend of racing as well. We've loads of texts in. I just didn't get time to read them all, unfortunately. But my thanks to you, Alan.
Pleasure, Hugh. Enjoyed it.
We'll talk to you Wednesday night. Ronan Lawler produced tonight. Andy was our BCO and will be. Oh, that's a permanent fixture as well, which is great.
Woo!
Yeah, he's much better looking than Louise as well. That's what I always said. Anyway, we're back tomorrow night, and Louise McSharry's on the way after the break.
Game on 2FM weekdays from 7:00.